Blog Talk Radio.
December 23rd at 2010 at 8 p.m. I'm your host, Pope Runyon, Brother Fabian. Tonight, I'll be assisted by Soror Andrea and our very special guest, Merrick Hamer, who is also our Frater Memnonides. And we're going to read the Baal Samin Winter Solstice OTA ceremony, which we performed at Rivendell on the 18th of this month. Now, this won't be up to Orson Welles' Mercury Radio Theater standards because we don't have any sound effects or recording the crowd noises and all that, and we're sort of going to pass the script around and do the best we can. Also, I have a ferocious cold, and so if my voice doesn't hold out till the end of the show, I'm just going to turn the rest of the male parts over to Merrick. I'd like to mention that Merrick Hamer is quite a celebrity in our area. He's the star of our movie Beyond Lemuria. He played Phylos and Brother Abaddon, and those of you who recall that. Merrick is also, along with the OTA, Merrick follows the Golden Dawn tradition, and I might mention that he is the best Masonic ritualist in the state of California. He knows all of the major roles in all of the Scottish Rite degrees, and he knows them by heart. He really is the Book of Eli, if you've seen that film. And as I said, we're going to do the Balsamin ceremony that we did on the 18th. I'm going to try to do Baal and Lotan both, and Merrick will do Lord of the Vines and also the Odos, and Soror Andrea will do Lady of the Field and the Goddess Tanit. Now, this ceremony is extrapolated from the Rosh Hashanah tablets. It's about 3,500 years old, but we've kind of modernized it a little bit. And Lord Baal is called upon to bring back the sun. And he tries to do this. He tries to fight the dragon of chaos. He has no chance of winning without the aid of the moon goddess. And so, tune in and help us celebrate the return of the sun at winter solstice. Now, to set the scene, we didn't do this outdoors because we had the worst storm of the last 12 years. It was just getting started when we went on the 18th, so we did this inside the temple, but usually it's done out in the henge, and we have a henge of 8 man ears. It's erected with the alchemical altar in the center. Now there are lights on the Mars, Venus, and Moon, and Saturn menhirs, and a sword hangs on the inner side of the Mars menhir, and the other side hangs the covered magic mirror, and below that is the brazier and a tripod in which the fire is laid. Now, we gather the celebrants in the hermitage, and the prologue is read by the Odos. That's a term from Kratoropoa. And then we process in carrying candles, all of us carrying candles, and we process in around the henge, and each celebrant carries a slip of paper upon which he or she has written a New Year's resolution or a wish that that Baal will place in the brazier and Tanit will will bless the wish, and we'll see if the wishes will come true. So, with that scene set, here is Mary Kamer, Greater Maimonides, with the prologue that is given before we come to the hedge.
The festival of Baal Samin at the winter solstice. The drama depicts Prince Baal's triumph over Lotan, the dragon of chaos, with the aid of Tanit, goddess of the moon. This victory symbolizes the return of the sun's power in winter season on the northern quadrant of the magical circle, which is ruled by the principle of earth and the philosophical element of salt, connoting the process of separation, third of the four primal operations of alchemy, during which the purified sulfur and mercury are drawn apart in preparation for their final union. Hearken now unto the myth of the sacred year. It was written in the dawn of the age of Aries, in the years when Melchizedek was priest-king in Salem, a tale older than the walls of Jericho, of how Lotan, primeval dragon of chaos, elder lord of the storm-tossed seas and the vaster deeps of space beyond, did seek to conquer the world in the dead of winter, when the sun's power was at its lowest ebb. Then did Lotan descend with the howling of the north wind on the longest night of the year, whereupon the people besieged Prince Baal, Cloud Rider, to be their champion, imploring him to save them from storm and flood, to bring them promise of the sun's return. Baal appeared in the south, brandishing his thunderbolt. He attacked Lotan bravely, but to no avail, his weapons useless against the Lord of Chaos, who was the father of storm and lightning. There was only one way that Lotan could be vanquished. The old serpent hid the secret of his vulnerability in a riddle which he challenged Prince Baal to guess in three attempts, or forfeit his freedom. Thus spake the dragon of seven heads. What is born with horns that wither away? What bloometh by night and hideth by day? What riseth in fire and fadeth cold gray? Twice Baal failed to say the answer, and then in the rising of the moon it was revealed to him the secret. He called upon the white goddess Tanit, who caught the raging Lotan in her net of silver rays and led him in gentle bondage to kneel before the throne in the east, where Baal was then robed and crowned king of the sacred year. Then did the king perform the alchemy of separation with the fire of the returning sun, inflaming the golden sra of the macroprosopis in the chalice of the solstices on the holy table of art. He then served the vitalized sacrament to the celebrants in a joyous round until the holy grail had been emptied and all the elect had received the elixir vitae in the hour of the sun's return. So it was, so it is, and so shall it be.
After reading the prologue, the celebrants are gathered east of the henge and they're formed in a line facing north. All of them take hands, with the men and women alternating. The lady of the field leads the procession, and the Lord of the Vines brings up the rear as they move westward to wind Daisil around the henge. Field and vine call the chant, and the celebrants repeat the chorus.
With the sun's far-fading light, howling winds of winter night,
Lotan, spare us from thy wrath, while we tread the sacred path.
Darkness evermore we fear, chaos rules the waning year.
Lotan, spare us from thy wrath, while we tread the sacred path.
The chant continues until the circle is closed about the hinge. Field and Vine enter. They take their positions west and east of the altar, which is lighted by one candle. The Odos sings the ancient Orphic hymn to Corybras.
The mighty ruler of this earthly ball, forever flowing to these rites I call, martial blessed, unseen by mortal sight, preventing fears and pleased with gloomy night. Hence fancy's terrors are by thee allayed, all various king who lovest the desert shade. Each of thy brothers killing, blood is thine, twofold curate, many-formed divine. By thee transmuted Kerry's body pure, became a dragon savage and obscure. Avert thine anger, hear me when I pray, and by fixed fate drive fancy's fear away.
What is this dreary sanctum where the ancient altar stands? What forces rule the longest night when the sun deserts our lands?
This sacred circle ever bounds the edge of earth and sky. Into the gulf of Yom we gaze, where even the gods must die. Lotan the dragon rules in winter, where the sun is far and dim, yearly storming down from heaven, charging all should worship him.
We hear the sound of a bull roarer, and Lotan appears outside the hinge in the north. Who dares not yield me homage? I who reigned before the dawn. I was old when the gods were borning. I will live when the stars are gone. Lotan enters the hinge, moving Widdershins and forcing Field and Vine to exit in terror. Call thy proudest godling against me. I shall swallow him in one bite. Your gods are dreams, born in my slumber. My waking puts them quick to flight.
Lord Baal, thy children here beseech thee, bring us promise of the sun. Battle for us against the darkness. Give no quarter, ask for none. Come on wings of storm cloud flying, proudly weaponed for the fray. Come with lightning and with thunder. 'Tis the sun's last waning day. When all creation quakes and trembles, and the beast doth writhe and rage, when the mighty mill tree rolls uneven, we fear the ending of our age. Lord Baal, thy children do implore thee, for grove and vineyard, flock and field, stay the hailstorm and the deluge. Come with flaming lance and shield.
A gong sounds, and Baal appears in the south. He enters the hinge, brandishing a fire wand. Behold, the sun is now returning. Let our fire drive back the night. The Prince of Earth shall meet this challenge. I shall win the champion fight. The beast shall quail before my thunder. Lightning bolts shall sear his hide. I shall beat him back and chain him where the four winds do abide. Baal hurls three bolts. Wotan holds his ground and he laughs. And he forces Baal to retreat around the hinge Widdershins.
Fool, would you fight me with a tempest? From my breath the winds arise. Would you threaten me with lightning? 'Tis but the flashing of mine eyes. Only silver rays may chain me. Only one may lead me round. And should ye guess my riddle, then my weakness might be found. But should you fail to guess it, then to chaos you are bound.
Oh, say thy riddle, sir, but I shall have it in a trice. But should I fail to guess it, then I pledge to pay thy price.
Lotan laughs in anticipation of his triumph. What is born with horns that wither away? What blooms by night and hides by day? What rises in fire and fades cold gray?
Light is but a rose of thorny bud from out of a thicket, red as blood.
That blooms by night and hides by day. Methinks my price you soon shall pay.
Why, wait, but then there's some spiny desert flower that blooms by night and gives you power.
Your spines and thorns are hardly horns. Your wit is near its end. One guess have you remaining before my doom descends.
A chime rings nine times, and the goddess Tinit enters the henge from the west, wearing her lighted headdress. Why, 'tis fair Tinit, lady of the moon, born with horns that wither so soon. She shines by night to vanish by day, rising in flame and setting cold gray. Lotan shrinks back with a moan of defeat.
Prince of Earth, Earth, hast thou forgotten that my rising rules the tide? By my cycle, time is reckoned. Are not my phases nature's guide? I alone may master Lotan, hold him in his natural course. All thy solar fire and fury come to naught without my force.
Tinit displays the mystic eye in the palm of her left hand. Then she leads the submissive Lotan in a full circle daisil to the eastern men here, as she says.
With a gentle hand I lead him in my net of silver rays to the golden seat of morning, where thy power now may plays.
Tinit leads Baal Deasil to the west, where he exits. Leads Lotan, excuse me. Tinit leads Lotan Deasil to the west, where he exits. She returns to Baal in the east. Together they light the lamps on the menhirs at the four quarters, one speaking the charge while the other lights the lamp, always moving Deasil.
In the name Peralda, Queen of the Sylphs, let there be light in the east.
In the name of Nyxa, Queen of the Undines, let there be light in the west.
In the name of Jin, King of the Salamanders, let there be light in the south.
In the name of Gob, King of the Gnomes, let there be light in the north. While Tinit moved to the east, Field and Vine enter and also move to the east. Field carries Baal's mantle, and Vine holds a solar medallion. They approach Baal.
With this robe we do best thee, Lord of all the eye can see.
With the sign of soul we crown thee, Prince of Earth, by ill's decree.
Baal lights a brazier outside the eastern menhir and says, Sun flame rise, cast out the darkness and the chaos that we fear. Bring us life and love and plenty through all the seasons of the year. Baal uncovers a magic mirror hanging above the flame. He faces the celebrants and he declares, As Prince of Earth, I'm intercessor for those below and realms above. Let heaven's portal now be open o'er this flame of light and love. Field and Vine exit to lead the celebrants around the outside of the henge daisil, each coming to the brazier where they burn the slips of paper on which they've written their New Year's wishes and resolutions. Tinit, who remains with Baal, blesses each of the celebrants.
May your best wishes come to pass.
With this completed, Tinit kisses Baal and exits. Baal lights his fire wand, moves to the altar, and uncovers and elevates the grail. By the formula of separation, dross will rise and burn away, leaving alchemistical quintessence of the golden solar ray. Baal lights the grail and holds the flaming elixir out to the celebrants. turning to make eye contact with everyone before asking, "Who drinks with me?"
"We drink with thee."
"Who drinks with me?"
"We drink with thee."
Field and vine start the circle dance, circumambulating Deosil as all sing the grail round. Round and round the circle goes, while the sacred river flows. Round and round the king we hail, till we drain the holy grail. Ball circles the Ange in pace with the drinkers and the dancers, in making them wonder who he will select to share his cup. Who drinks with me?
We drink with thee.
Who drinks with me?
We drink with thee.
Who drinks with me?
We drink with thee.
Drink. Baladad, Hamalek, Baladad, Hamalek, Baladad, Hamalek, Baladad, Hamalek, Baladad, Hamalek. The chant continues while the celebrants drink, and while the grail, and when the grail is handed back to Baal, Field and Vine start the circle dance, and the grail wound up again. When the grail is finally empty, Baal holds it upside down and declares, "It is finished. It is done. Now feast and revel, everyone." We have a drum roll. Baal disappears, and
Lord of Heaven, Prince of Earth, in spring return with bud and birth.
Field and Vine lead the celebrants back to the hermitage, chanting,
"The solar wheel is burning bright, whirling back the veil of night. Lord of Heaven, Lord of Light, honored be thy holy right."
Well, that concludes the ceremony, and that gives you some idea if you followed and visualized along with it. You can see the summer solstice ceremony done pretty much complete on our video, The Rites of Magic, and that this one, of course, is the winter solstice one, but you get an idea of how this looks around the Ange if you watch the summer ceremony on Rites of Magic. And by the way, Brother Maimonides, he does the prologue in the film, The Rites of Magic, also. So that is really, the ceremony's not really that long. And so if you folks want to call in and ask us any questions, for heaven's sake, please do so. The guest call-in number is 347-857-1830. Now, in the remaining time we have, I'd like to discuss some things about this ceremony. Let me have the book back, if you may. The background of the ceremony and when we first came up with it. And you know, some of the history behind it. The first thing that you should know, especially those of you who are not familiar with our program, that these ceremonies are based on the Rosh Imrah tablets that were discovered in Syria back right before World War II. Now, before that time, there really wasn't that much known about Canaanite mythology. We had some idea of it, and of course, Jesse Weston wrote that wonderful book from Ritual to Romance, in which she proposed the idea that the original Holy Grail was Canaanite. That's a marvelous book. It still holds up, by the way, even though she wrote it before the Rosh Imrah tablets were discovered, and they confirmed what she wrote. What she basically put forth in this, in From Ritual to Romance, was the idea that the grail represented Baal's death, and this took place traditionally up in the Lebanon in the mountains at a sacred spring called Ephaka. And Ephaka, the spring came out of the mountain, it fell down the cliff several hundred feet down to the gorge below. And there was this beautiful grotto, and there was the sacred shrine of Baal and Astarte. And every year, at high summer, they would have this Adonia ceremony up there at this waterfall, and coming out of the mountain. And the reason why the idea of the Grail of the blood, you know, of the blood, the water turning into blood, was that the gorge fell down and was the start of the River Ebrum. And the River Ebrum had a hematite layer, stratification, and when the water rose up at this particular time, after the spring rains, the water got high enough, it would hit that hematite layer and turn the water red. And that was where the idea of the blood, the blood came from, according to Jesse Weston. Well, when the Rashomon tablets were discovered, and they weren't translated, they were discovered before World War II, but, you know, the World War II held up the translation. They weren't available in translation until just in the late 1950s they began to put out the translation. Then we realized that, yes, they did have the tradition of a grail. Baal had a goblet that awed mortal men. This was a huge goblet. And so we know that this tradition of ours, calling this the Holy Grail, is based upon both that in the Rosh Hashanah tablets, and also Jesse Weston's treatise in From Ritual to Romance. Now, the first time we did this ceremony was December 28th, 1974, and that was in Pasadena at Mont Savant Temple in Pasadena. And when we first did it, we had the henge lined up in two rows, and we very quickly went over to a circular pattern later, which is better. We've got we do all of our ceremonies in a circular in the circular henge now, and in the original henge that we used in Pasadena a few years after that was the one that Fred Adams had built out of railroad ties, and it was quite substantial. Anyway. I have written here a little bit about this from our book, Seasonal Rites of Baal and Astarte and Prince of Cotton, the Magic Bow. This book of ours contains the ceremony we just read for you, and it also has the other three ceremonies. Plus, it has a modernized, kind of fictionalized version of one of the Canaanite epics, which you would also enjoy, Prince of Cotton, the Magic Bow. Remember, way back when we got started with the radio program, I read on three nights, I read Prince of Cotton, the Magic Bow. Actually, Merrick does a better job reading that than I do, and at one point he had it memorized. That was quite an achievement. Now, the earliest mythological symbol of chaos is the great serpent, or the beast of the abyss. The Babylonians called it Tiamat, and considered it to be female. And they vanquished it at their New Year's festival, and was vanquished by the god hero Marduk. And in our Canaanite mythos, the serpent is a male entity known as Lotan, and that's right from the Rosh Hashanah tablets. The direct ancestor of the biblical Leviathan, who was defeated by the solar hero, or the green man, Baal. And in our ritual drama, which we extrapolated from those Rosh Hashanah tablets, Lotan, the serpent, appears beyond the circle in the northern quadrant, appropriate to the season and the traditional direction from which evil emanates. Now, Baal is invoked, and he appears in the southern quadrant, armed with a wand of fire, and he declares that the sun is returning. Now, something I want to mention about the sun god and the moon, the sun and the moon in ancient Canaanite mythology. The sun was female, Shapshish, and she was female. And the god, in Canaan at least, the god Yarik was the moon god, and his wife was Nikal. And I think I mentioned before that we wanted in modern paganism, we need a strong moon goddess. And so we went over to Carthage, which was a Phoenician colony, and they had a very strong moon goddess. And she was called the Face of Baal. That's Tanit. And she's very powerful and primary and a primary moon goddess. So we thought that if these ceremonies evolved the way they would have evolved, that certainly Tanit would have replaced Nikal as the moon goddess. And also, I might add that if you listen closely to the ceremony, you realize that we're not doing this in Canaanite style. Canaanite style is everything is repeated three times, and frankly, it really makes for kind of a boring presentation when you have to repeat everything three times and using a slightly different metaphor each time. That was their style. That's the way they did it. But in modernizing the ceremonies, we didn't do it in Canaanite style. We opted for something like a Ren Faire, like an Elizabethan style, more like John Barleycorn or St. George and the Dragon, like a Renaissance kind of a play. Now, we feel that's justified because if these ceremonies had lasted, that's the way they would have ended up. They would have been redone in the style that we're all accustomed to. And all of us in the Romantic community, of course, always go to the Ren Faire. We always love these Elizabethan-type mystery plays. By the way, when I did the seasonal ceremonies originally, I used the mystery, the medieval Chester mystery plays as the theatrical model for this. I got those Chester mystery plays, and I just went through them. I said, this is the way we're going to do it, the way we have to do it. Now, I confirmed this some years later because I did another Canaanite epic, the story of Charit, of King Charit, and I tried to do that at Raven's Flight, present that in Canaanite style. And frankly, everybody was bored. So I confirmed my suspicion that as much as, it was like, I remember one time Ed and I went to a presentation at Chapman University with this fellow reading Beowulf in Old English. And he sat on the stage and he had a lyre with one string. And he plucked this thing. Plump. And then he would go, I just sat there thinking, oh, come on, really. I know this is very scholarly, but no, we got to, you have these ceremonies have to evolve. And also, too, and I've been told that Canaanite, we got a call. Good. You're on the air. Who am I talking to?
Hey, this is Mike Downs from Atlanta, Georgia. Good evening.
Right.
Happy New Year to yourself. Merrick and Zandria, bravo, excellent performance of the ceremony.
Thanks. I was afraid my voice wasn't going to hold out, but I had Merrick here to back me up if it didn't. And, of course, Merrick's the master, I mean, he's terrific. Anyway, what would you like to ask us?
I wouldn't call in to interrupt. It's fascinating, everything you're saying, but I figured maybe your voice can use a rest. At least a little bit while I get a question out on this one. So speaking of the eight solar seasonals, does the OTO as a order, do they do any official lunar work on full moons or new moons or anything of that kind? That's kind of part one of the question.
Actually what we do is we don't do the cross quarters. The cross quarters, we do the quarters. That's the solstices and the equinoxes. And we have a lot of Wiccan friends, and some of whom are members of the OTA. And what we usually do is we go to their cross quarter. We go to their cross quarter ceremonies, and then they come to our quarter ceremonies. And that's pretty much the way we do it. So that gives us eight a year. We do four of them, and we do the solstices and the equinoxes, and they do the cross quarters. And that sort of divides up the effort, if you know what I mean. As far as doing, full moon, and yeah, we usually do our goetic operations on a waxing moon, on a full moon. And I'm gonna give this over to Merrick for a little bit because I might get my voice back. Does that answer your question?
Oh, that's kind of part one. And the second question is, give your throat a rest, get some water and stuff. What do you think about a night or two ago, at the actual winter solstice, roughly within less than a day, we had the full moon and it was eclipsed, by the Earth, so at the northern node, which could be considered the head of the dragon, since we're talking about Lotan the dragon. Just any thoughts on that? I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. That is an interesting correspondence. And again, you got to watch out on eclipses, though. They're not. Soros Andrea is a better astrologer than I am. She could tell you about that. But eclipses are usually not very good to be doing magic on. According to Picatrix, as I recall, if you want to go after somebody and you want to do a job on them, you can do it through an eclipse. But other than that, you got to be kind of careful with doing magic on it. However, it is sort of like it does sort of have a reference to Lotan. And does that answer what you're coming up with there?
It does. And just want to say, again, that was very dramatic. I mean, really, Mystery Theater has nothing on you guys. You did a great job. And just want to say that. So.
Well, thanks a lot. We really enjoyed doing it. And we're glad you enjoyed it. Have a good one.
All right. Okay.
We got some time left. We plan to do this ceremony. That was our major thing tonight. So the rest of the show is kind of open. So come on. What? All right. Yeah, the rest of the show is kind of open, so you folks call on in and ask us questions and give us your thoughts on this. I'm going to keep talking about the ceremony, though, basically what's behind it and everything else, and we'll keep that going. Discuss the alchemy involved in this. And those of you who are in the associate member program, you know that you remember that question that we had on the last test that we sent out, that our alchemy, the first four primal operations of alchemy are represented by the four seasonal ceremonies. Now, we get this. There are different theories on what the four first primal operations of alchemy are. But ours, we fall back on Sir George Ripley and from the 1600s and his 12 gates of alchemy, and that's where we get our first four operations of alchemy. And you remember that we start off in the south with calcination, the sulfur sign, and then we go to the west, we go to the fall in the west with the mercury, and that's solution. And then in the north for salt and earth, and salt and earth we have separation. And then we go right to the altar, and we come right to the altar and then we put the essence in the grill, and then that's conjunction, and that's the sacred marriage. And these follow Ripley's 12 gates. They are the first, they are the first four primal operations of alchemy. Now, this gives the seasonal ceremony cycle a seasonal analog and an alchemical analog, so it's microcosm, macrocosm, that are enacted in these ceremonies, and everything is tuned up to the seasons. One of the things I will mention is that here in Southern California, our seasons here in Southern California are virtually identical with the seasonal cycle in Palestine. And one of the reasons why I think Canaanite mythology is better for any sort of a Kabbalistic magical group, especially Solomonic magic, and the reason for that, I think, is this. The Canaanite god forms fit on the Tree of Life better than the Egyptian god forms. Now, also, Davies and others have shown, the Sumerian Assyrian god forms, they fit on the Tree of Life very well, too, because they have a relationship to the formation of the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah. However, the Canaanite god forms are actually closer to the Bible, and so closer to King Solomon. And also, with the Babylonian and the Assyrian, Sumerian, there's a lot of chaos over there, and there's a lot of, still is, by the way, a lot of chaos, and these people really were, demon worshippers almost. I mean, to the extent that there was so much chaos and so many wars and so many floods and all this kind of stuff, that their religion is a lot harsher and a lot more, a lot more demonic than the Canaanite. Canaanite's actually a peaceful religion, which in many ways it is. And yet, at the same time, the Canaanites were also the Hyksos who invaded Egypt, and they were pretty warlike too. So, and we have our warrior goddess, just like Ishtar, Anath. And Anath eventually becomes softened down and changes places with Astarte. But the Canaanite god forms are really better suited, I think, than the Egyptian. Because the Egyptian, see, one of the reasons for that is that Egypt was like another planet. All you have in Egypt is High Nile, Low Nile, and Middle Nile. The Nile floods the land. It puts all the soil on the land, then it subsides. So they don't have four seasons like Palestine does or like California does. They don't have those four seasons. They just have three seasons. Now, they didn't use the Tree of Life, so they have all kinds of... Whenever you try to assign Egyptian gods to the Tree of Life, you end up making arbitrary choices. Oh, you can do it, and a lot of people do, but they're kind of arbitrary choices, although you know exactly where all the Canaanite gods and goddesses fit on the Tree of Life. So the seasonal ceremonies very, very much relate to magic, and they very much relate to the Kabbalah. And also, too, I might mention this, that they very much, this also relates to Freemasonry, although I wrote all these ceremonies, and researched them and wrote them up, and we were performing them before I ever became a Mason. So I think I can say this without anybody saying that we're cribbing from Masonry. But these ceremonies are the ceremonies, or like the ceremonies, of King Hiram of Tyre and Hiram of Biff. And so therefore, when they got together with King Solomon to build the temple, you're going to get the idea that they all work together. They work together with the Hebrews, and King Solomon was one grand master, and he was a Hebrew. And King Hiram was a Phoenician, worshiper of El. And Hiram Abiff, his father was Phoenician, and his mother was Jewish. And so what we have is, in Masonry, what we should have, the symbolism of the temple, is these early Canaanite people working with the Hebrews to build this temple for the one God. And the one God is not just Yahweh. The one God is God, the God for everybody. And this, I believe, is the ultimate secret behind Masonry, that we should all respect each other's religions, but we should all realize that inside God. Each man has God inside him. Each woman has God inside her, and that we shouldn't be saying, well, our God's better than your God, or our God's the only God, or anything like that. And this is one of the things I think that if you really study the Canaanite in relation to the Solomon's time, you can't escape this conclusion. And this is why the Canaanite God forms fit so well in the Kabbalah. Anybody else want to call in here? Well, I'm going to turn this over to Merrick for a minute. Let him talk about whatever you want to talk about, Merrick, in relation, kind of on the same theme, but whatever. Here.
Well, thank you, Polk. I've been entertained by everything you've said so far, and certainly your reading and our Sora's reading here. I'll give Polk a moment to rest his voice, his hurting voice. I'm a storyteller. I do that professionally, and I really derive a lot of inspiration from this story that's been restructured and discovered and restructured by the Church of Hermetic Science. Story, of course, is what makes a culture perpetual. Like a story, a myth never really dies. It's very much alive, and it speaks to people of every time, every age, to those people that have the ears to hear. And that's the meaning of this story for me. I'm going to pass the phone to our story here for any... Nope, she's waving that I should give it back to Pope. How's your voice now, Pope? Yeah, it's come back. All right. Nice talking with this wonderful audience.
Thank you, Brother Maimonides. And Merrick, of course, is a master storyteller, as you have experienced tonight. And the our moon goddess is being shy here. The moon is going behind a cloud. Oh, we got a call. Good. Thank goodness, my voice. Thank you. Where's my voice? Who are we talking to?
This is Baal the First.
Baal the First. Which Baal is that?
It's what? The one that was at your ceremony in Pasadena in the 70s.
Oh, my gosh. It's Dr. Rex. It's Dr.
Exactly.
Rex. Is Dr. Rex in California yet?
Yes,
he is in California. Well, we got to get together, you know, now that you're back in California. Well,
absolutely.
Mention your first, you know, let my voice rest a little bit. Mention your first, for heaven's sake, help me out.
Alrighty. Well, the first ceremony was very interesting. It was far simpler than it is today, of course, because you build on what you've done before. And I was painted a slight green, as I recall, and then I was raised up, very similar to Hiram Abiff, I believe, the legend. And it was a wonderful ceremony, and I've been with it ever since. As you recall, I also was Baal the 33rd, as you a few years ago when you did the ceremony again. It is a very beautiful ceremony, and if those who are listening can attend, it's well worth doing so. I don't know how this can be arranged, but hopefully it can. But this call principally is in support of all of your efforts, and I can only say that I hope you continue them. I hope you continue writing, so make sure you do so. Or else.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Dr. Rex. I really, by the way, let me mention this. We are bringing this seventh way out. I keep saying this, but every time I try to get it to the printer, something else comes up and delays me. But Dr. X has, in this coming seventh way, a 50-page, detailed, beautifully illustrated article on alien radios. In other words, I've been jokingly calling them spook radios, but apparently we shouldn't call them. I guess we shouldn't call them spook radios. These are the radio sets that you can tune in and hear voices from the other dimensions in the other world. And so what Dr. X has done is he's got, being a scientist and being an engineer and all that, and being fascinated by this, and also having built a prototype of the original Hidden World Receiver, which we took up to Shasta and experimented with, Dr. X has this big article coming out on the Multiverse Receiver. And this will be laying the groundwork for the ultimate radio to reach the beyond. And frankly, I've been fascinated by this idea ever since Cocteau's Orpheus and Orpheus in the... Yeah, who's calling?
Hello? Yeah, it's still me, Dr. X. It's just me,
oh,
Dr.
X. Still you.
Still here.
Yeah, Dr. X. Okay, tell us where you're at on the Hidden World Receiver.
Well, I have the basic theory down. Part of the design is down, and I'm just waiting to write up the final proposal for yourself to approve, and see you take it from there.
Well, I'll sure do it, and we're going to build this device, and this one will really it'll be the best. I mean, of all of them. But this article is good. This article is really in detail. And those of you who are interested in electronic voice phenomenon, that are interested in extraterrestrial communication, this will be the unit. And we're really looking forward to it. Okay, Mark, I want to get together with you guys. How about Sunday?
That's excellent for us. I'll call you with some details.
Okay. Yeah, please do, because we're going to get together with.
I have one more thing for Merrick. Merrick, I still have a recording. Merrick, I still have a recording of your call from last year. I really appreciate these things, and I wish you the very best, Oak, and Lauren. Every best thing come your way. I hope so. We'll talk to you soon.
Dr. X, this is Merrick. Polk handed the phone so I could hear a little bit of your message, and really appreciate that. It's good hearing from you again.
My pleasure.
And people are going to have a beautiful holiday season.
Hey, is there any chance you can get together with us at the same time?
Well, that's a possibility. We'll look
okay.
into that.
I'll get a hold of you guys.
Pointing to his watch. I guess that means I need to hand him back.
No, you don't.
No. All right.
All right. Okay, I'll let you all go. I'll talk to you all soon, okay?
Thank you for your call.
My pleasure. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
I was trying to get off, trying to keep moving up to the last minute here so I could rest my voice. But anyway, yeah, Dr. X is back in town, so we'll get together and plot new and dangerous machines or whatever. And so remember, now, those of you in the Associate Member Program, this ceremony is one that you will, eventually run across, and we'll be covering this in some of the questions and that we have. And also, too, I want everybody to be aware that the book, The Seasonal Rites of Baal and Astarte, that has all four seasonal ceremonies and the Prince of Cotton and the Magic Bow, is available on Amazon, and you can you can get it on Amazon. They're in stock, and it's a beautiful book. It has a couple of color plates in it, and costume designs and instructions for doing it. In fact, you could if you wanted to, and we'll be more than happy to license you to do these ceremonies. But we want to make sure we have an agreement with you if you want to do them. And the agreement, basically the agreement amounts to that you won't charge anybody money for them. And if we're going to publish these, and we would like you to do them the way we've written them, in other words, don't get too creative with them. There's plenty of room to be creative, by the way, even if you stick with the script. Definitely look for the book on Amazon. Seasonal Rites of Baal and Astarte, Prince of Cotton and the Magic Bow, and it has an introduction by Robert S. Elwood, who is very prominent in theosophy and whatever, and formerly the head of the Comparative Religion Department at USC. And so, frankly, that just about all we have for tonight. And so, in the meantime, I'm going to go home and have a hot toddy and see if I can get my throat back in shape. Thanks for putting up with us, and hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you next week. And next week, we'll have another topic. What should we cover next week? What do you think? Okay, we'll get back into regular ceremonial magic, and we'll be discussing next week. We'll get into the mechanics of a Goetia operation. I think we haven't done that yet. We'll just lay out all the mechanics of it, and so sort of a hands-on kind of a thing. We'll do it. Okay, that's what we'll do next week. So we'll see you then, and meanwhile, good magic. Thank you.